This summer, Walt Disney Pictures presents a motion picture fantasy adventure beyond your fondest imagination. You'll be transported miraculously back to the enchanted land of Oz, that magical kingdom beloved by young and old for generations.
It's just a yellow brick.
No, Belina, you don't understand. This was the Yellow Brick Road.
You'll share with Dorothy Gale the shock of finding everything mysteriously changed.
What's happened to everybody?
And you'll delight with her discovery of four wonderful new friends who band together against a wicked queen and the dreaded Gnome King. This is the Oz you haven't seen before, and this is the Oz you'll want to visit again and again. From Walt Disney Pictures comes a whole new world of entertainment.
Why don't we just fly back to Kansas?
Return to Oz.
Hello, welcome to Pop Culture Man Children. If you don't know, this is your first episode. This is a podcast where I talk with other nerds about nerdy, fun media, pop culture-y things. We talk about movies, new and old. Sometimes we talk about video games, mostly old. We talk about toys. We talk about things we're into. Our guest today is very into grammar and English, and he's got a dictionary. He's a dictionary fan, the fandom of words. And you know, there's a little something for everybody. If you're looking down, if you're scrolling down in the episodes and you see something you don't know, hey, give it a listen anyway. I might turn you on to something good.
This is a sales pitch.
Yeah, this is Pop Culture Man Children, available anywhere podcasts are. I'm Mike Bongiorno. With me today, once again, is
Anthony Bongiorno.
Anthony Bongiorno.
Were you trying to think of my name?
No. I was thinking about, do I say you're my brother?
Well, now you've let the cat out of the bag.
Yeah. Well, we both have the same last name. Anthony, welcome back.
Thank you.
Today is a special episode. We are talking about the 1985
classic,
cult classic, Return to Oz.
Yes.
Directed by Walter Murch.
Yes.
The only film he ever directed.
Yeah, I didn't know that until I looked it up. Because for some reason, I always thought he had directed The English Patient.
No, he edited it. He's mostly an editor.
Yeah, and sound mixer, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
But he also co-wrote a couple of screenplays.
Yeah, and he worked on the Godfather movies.
Yeah.
He went to UCLA, so he was friends with Spielberg and George Lucas. And actually, Return to Oz was produced by Gary Kurtz.
Yes.
Who produced the first two Star Wars movies.
Yeah.
Who just passed away. So we both have a long history with this movie. You love this movie, or at least you did as a kid.
Well, I'm gonna give some background here.
Yeah, please.
I'm a big Wizard of Oz fan.
Yes.
Ever heard of it? No, just kidding. big Wizard of Oz fan. Read a lot of the books. I was very into it as a kid, and then because I was very into it as a kid, our parents.
Mm-hmm. And as you know, if you're a longtime listener, our parents. Classic bootleggers.
Yes, classic bootleggers. Bootlegged a bunch of iterations of The Wizard of Oz for me.
Yeah, I feel
me.
Like we saw every version of it.
We saw every version, so this was just one of them, but then other ones included The Wiz, and then
various animated
versions
you
and
can't
whatever.
Forget the made-for-TV movie with John Ritter as L. Frank Baum.
Yes, and
what
I did a
called?
Book report on the book
Creator
that was based
of Oz,
on.
Creator of Oz.
God, what was that called? The Dreamer of Oz.
Dreamer of Oz. I feel like we watched that 1,000 times.
There was an anime version that was dubbed over in English that they taped for us that we watched.
Yes, I remember that.
That was like a half-hour or shortened version.
Yeah, that one's old. That one's like from the 60s or whatever.
No, you're thinking of... We're going to get to that in a second.
Sorry.
This one's from the 80s, and it was dubbed over with the woman... The girl who played Annie was
okay.
The voice of Dorothy. But anyway,
okay.
Loved it. Rewatched it yesterday for the first time ever as an adult.
Really?
Yeah, I think the last time I watched it was like over 10 years ago. And I have to tell you, I really still like it a lot. I think it's a really good movie.
All right, settle in, folks. I have problems with it as an adult, but I still see its charms. I've showed it in class. And I actually like showing it in class because I was teaching a genre class and I was looking for a fantasy. And I was like, well, look, they've watched Lord of the Rings.
Yeah.
What's something that they don't know but they're familiar with?
You punished them enough with Lord of the Rings.
Exactly. Well, I thought like... it's too long. I'm not going to show them. I try to never show them something you've already seen. But everyone has seen Wizard of Oz, but a lot of people haven't seen Return to Oz. So it felt like the perfect in-between of like something you're familiar with, but you haven't seen. So, all right, looking at it as an adult.
Okay.
What are your reactions to it?
Okay, so here are my reactions to it. First of all, it's one of those movies that you've seen so many times. I don't know if anybody else can relate to this, but you've seen a movie 100 times as a kid, and then you haven't watched it for 20 years, but then as you're watching it, you remember everything. Like little sound cues, lines of dialogue, little like looks that the actors...
It's like stuck
faces
in there.
Faces that they make that's just stuck in my brain.
You know what stood out to me? It seems like there's a bunch of times... where Fairuza Balk is doing a Judy Garland impression with her voice.
Yes.
And I don't know if...
Like a couple times she was like, it can't be helped or whatever.
Yeah, it's like, are you trying to do a Judy right now?
Yeah. But what stuck out to me as an adult was that it is a visually beautiful film.
Yes.
And there's an attention to detail that is very impressive throughout. Like think connections that I didn't make when I was a kid. So for example, you know, like the counterparts of the people in the real world versus in Oz,
which are much more weird in this than they are in the original.
I was too young and dumb to realize that like the Wheelers sounds are the same sounds from the asylum of the beds being, you know, rolled down the hallway,
right?
And the fact that she has heads, Mombi has different heads that she puts on, and she wants to take Dorothy's head. And in the beginning, they were treating her head with shock therapy.
Yeah.
You know, like all those things, you know, that obviously the MGM movie did, you know, because in the original Oz books, Oz is a real place. It's not a dream.
Right. But it's a real place in this, too.
Is it, though? That's one problem I had was the ambiguity of the ending. Like, is she just crazy? We'll get there, but...
Because in the end, she sees
Ozma.
Ozma in the mirror.
In the mirror.
I feel like the movie... very clearly is visually taken from the original illustrations.
Yes, that's what I was going to say. The Wheelers, their masks, like their helmets, when they put their heads down and you see a face on them, that is the original John Arnell illustration from the book.
Yeah.
A lot of it looks exactly like those original illustrations.
Yeah, the lion, the Tin Woodsman.
Amazing.
Look,
they look great.
Yeah.
But not like the MGM movie at all.
Right, and the story is an amalgam of the second and third book,
yes, which I've read.
With other shit put in.
It's mostly the third book with elements of the second book put in. But
so it's
none
trying
of the
to
books
be,
had shock therapy. That's totally new.
Right. And also, like, even though it's trying to be, you know, the director, Walter Murch, said, I'm trying to make it, you know, I want it to be faithful to the books. They still... like they, instead of the slippers being silver, they make them ruby. They actually had to pay MGM for the right to that. So I don't know if that's the director or if that was Disney being like, you have to make it. It seems to me like one of the reasons why it failed, and it did fail, it lost a lot of money, was because the director wanted it to be its own thing. And I think Disney was like, wanted it to be a sequel to Wizard of Oz, which it isn't. It's not a musical. It's very dark. It's entirely a different thing. It's it's closer to something like Harry Potter, you know, than it is, or even like The Hobbit, than it is the MGM.
Right.
Because the MGM Wizard of Oz is not a faithful adaptation at all.
No.
People love it. It's one of the best movies ever.
And it's amazing.
But it's not a faithful adaptation.
No, it's not. Well, that's the thing. That's the issue that I think any work that tries to follow up on The Wizard of Oz in any medium always has to, like, lives in the shadow of the MGM musical because it's such a huge thing.
Right.
So, like, the example you just you just said. Like, the movie slippers are there instead of the silver shoes from the book, because if you had the silver shoes, you wouldn't get that reaction from the audience.
Yeah, the audience would be like, I'm confused.
Right. And the same issues come up in Wicked. Like, if you read the book Wicked, which is much darker than the musical, I happen to like the musical more than the book.
Uh-huh.
Wicked is this weird thing where it's like a sequel to the books and also the MGM movie. Like, uh-huh. the ruby slippers are in it, but then there's also lore from the books in it.
Okay.
So it's Return to Oz, and anything Oz themed suffers from these same problems.
Right. I feel like you know what's similar to that? Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Every time someone tries to readapt Frankenstein, there always seems to be at once the impulse to make it like the book, which, by the way, they've never done.
Never.
They've never got there.
But the book is amazing.
But also the necessity of feeling like they have to homage at least the iconography from the Universal one. Right. You know, people say like, oh, the Kenneth Branagh Frankenstein is very, you know, the one with Robert De Niro. It's like, not really, because he's still not talking intellectually. Like they've never done it, really.
And then, and they had the gall to call it Mary Shelley's Frankenstein.
Scumbags.
And it borrows so heavily from The Bride of Frankenstein.
Right.
Which is not Mary Shelley.
No, exactly.
But anyway, so I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed watching it.
I enjoyed it, too. As an adult, it does. You do see choices that you're like, wow, what a bold choice, because it does start off in such a dark way.
The whole thing is dark.
Right.
That's the thing. There's one moment of brightness,
yeah,
and then she immediately is sent back home.
Right, but like the darkness of Dorothy's life in Kansas is so bleak.
It is
because we see that they're poor.
Yes,
it's 6 months after the events of the first book, so they're rebuilding a new house,
although she's getting her own room for the first time, which is cool.
But Uncle Henry, I guess, is an alcoholic now.
I knew you were gonna say that.
You don't see him drinking.
Why? Because he's like, the implication is that he's lazy and he's not working when he's supposed to be?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's very much, you're supposed to read that, because we see Uncle Henry not working.
Yes.
And then Dorothy goes, he broke his leg. And Aunt Em goes, his leg's been fine for a while now.
It's interesting that he needs
to get off his ass.
Yeah. It's this family that's
just... And we see an image of him in the background of him sitting in a rocking chair doing nothing.
It's so interesting because it's like, what a bold choice to pick up on the Gale family and having, you know, no lightness and breeziness, but it's just like, this is a family that's dealing with trauma.
Yeah.
They're recovering from a trauma where their daughter, their niece... When they lost their home, their niece went missing and is now mentally ill.
Yeah. They are strapped for cash.
They need her because they need her to work on the farm.
Right.
Which is why they're sending her for treatment. Yeah.
She can't. She hasn't slept a night through since she came back from Oz. So they're going to give her electric shock treatment. And as a kid, I don't think I knew what that was. I had no idea
of
the cultural implications of it or its historical implications. The idea that it was used to treat, like, the idea that she was, you know, they were going to give her, and they don't, right? The asylum, which is its own nightmare, is hit by lightning and she escapes.
I like the motif of electricity, though.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. Like, the way that, turning on an electric light was like, there was something ominous about it. And he was like, we're entering the new century.
Yeah, in a few months, it'll be the 20th century. The century of electricity.
That was cool.
I think, it's interesting because it has... When I was watching it, I thought, like, this has a very romantic view. Romantic in the true sense of, like, it's turning against science.
Like, capital R romantic.
Right, yeah. Exactly. Like machines are bad.
Yes.
Like, even in the end... When Dorothy comes back to Oz, when Dorothy comes back from Oz to Kansas, we find out that the doctor died because, well, everyone else ran out of the burning hospital. He ran in to save the machines, and that's what ended up killing him.
Yes.
So machines are bad.
Which was, that I kind of gave me pause because I was like, but the machine was TikTok, and TikTok was good.
TikTok is good.
So that was kind of a mixed message. But he's also the military.
They call it the Army of Oz.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I was confused. I always just, you know, when you're a kid and you watch something, you take it, you take everything on surface level, and it's just like, okay. But I was confused this time around as to, like, was the nurse arrested at the end?
Yeah, why is the nurse...
Why is she being carted away in the back of a truck?
It doesn't make sense.
A police wagon. It's not a truck, I'm sorry, but...
Right, it doesn't make sense because they're saying that the place burned.
But then, is it the police came in and saw that people were being abused? Because obviously the patients are being abused.
But...
Because you hear them moaning.
Yeah. It's truly terrifying. While she's in the asylum, first of all, it looks so bleak.
And it's truly like American Horror Story Season 2.
Yeah, you hear moans. You hear anguish. You hear, like, tortured moans of just great anguish. And
and then she even says,
"That's
historically
wrong. They wouldn't have arrested them. That was a treatment."
Oh yeah.
Like they weren't doing anything illegal. So I don't know.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense that we see her. It's just to be a mirror to when we see the Mombi, who is the same woman.
Right.
She's like the Wicked Witch, the way like Elmira Gulch is the mean old lady,
right.
And then inside the same actress plays the Wicked Witch. It's Mombi is put in a prison in Oz, where she has a great line at the end where she wrote this down. Ozma says,
a witch without powers.
Yeah, a witch without powers is a very miserable thing indeed.
Yeah.
And then Mombi says, like, yes, indeed, or something.
Yeah.
Everybody's depressed.
Yeah, it's the worst.
It's like they took the black and, you know, the whole black and white to color thing of the MGM film, and they were like, why don't we just make, instead of black and white, we just make it so children want to kill themselves.
I had lots of questions this time around. When she's in the asylum, a little blonde girl appears in her room, knows her name.
Yes.
And
gives her a pumpkin and says, Halloween is coming.
And says, Halloween's coming. This is for you. And she's like, what are you doing here, Dorothy? So when I was a kid, I was like, oh, that's... Okay, because later that same actress plays Ozma.
Yes.
So as a kid, I was like, okay, that's Ozma trying to communicating with her from Oz. But then this time around, I'm like thinking, no, I think this is just like one of those weird, like, there's the Oz counterpart to the real girl. And I was thinking, like, does this girl work in the asylum? Is she like a friend from school?
But she knows her name.
But she, right. So that's why I was like, maybe she just like knows her from around and is like, why are you here, Dorothy?
I read her as Ozma.
Yes, yeah, so I think you're supposed to, but at the beginning,
because if she's not,
that
then that little girl died.
It's like, well, yeah, and
she
then
drowned.
Also she left the room without opening the door. It's very like Dorothy turns around and she's just gone.
Yeah,
it's that part is very odd.
And she there's also you get a weird uncanny vibe because the little girl is being voiced over by someone else.
Yes.
Because the original little girl had an English accent, and they were like, that's no good. So she's redubbed by, I think, Walter Murch's daughter.
Yeah.
So you've got that disconnect. You can you may not necessarily know it, but that disconnect
it's there.
You get from a voiceover.
Yeah.
So you've got that.
Yeah. It's
she's weird because the whole Ozma thing, in the book, isn't Ozma changed into a different person?
Yeah,
into, like,
so
a boy?
So this, a lot of that, like Mombi, that Mombi stuff was a different character. But
Mombi's
but
like
Mombi
the
was
witch
a,
in it.
Mombi was a character, yeah.
You know what, let's back up just for a second, for anyone who hasn't seen the movie.
Well, pause this right now and watch it.
So what happens in the movie is, Dorothy, we've already explained in the beginning, she's sick. They take her to this asylum to give a shock treatment, but she runs away, and she there's like a flood because it's raining really bad, and she's in the river, and she wakes up, and she's in Oz, and she's with Belina, her chicken, who can speak now because it's Oz, and she sees that everything is, the Emerald City is destroyed, everyone there is turned into stones, all her friends from the original story, Tin Man, Lion, they are turned into stone. The Scarecrow.
So Oz is just as bleak as Kansas now.
Scarecrow is MIA. No one knows where he is. And she meets new friends. She meets TikTok, who's the Army of Oz, and he's you wind him up, and he walks and talks, and he protects her.
Mm-hmm.
You meet Jack Pumpkinhead, who was created, we find out, by Ozma, but he calls Dorothy Mom just to creep me out. he keeps calling her Mom.
This is all from the books, by the way. These characters are from the books.
And then there's Mr. Gump, who is made out of, like,
And they're also these characters, which are from the books, but are clearly a Scarecrow, Tin Man, and Lion stand-in.
Right. And one problem I had with the structure of the movie is it feels like there's no middle. It's just beginning and like she's on Kansas. She gets to Oz. It's funny. She follows Europe Road to Emerald City. She's there in 2 seconds.
2 seconds. That always bothers
me. So it's like, wait, the whole journey. Yeah, she gets there and...
I always feel like every time I watch this movie, I'm like, I forget what Oz looks like in this movie. And then I've watched it again and I'm like, what does Oz look like in this movie? It looks like nothing.
Because they don't show enough of it. I feel like it was filmed
in just a field somewhere.
They don't show... Because they clearly didn't have a lot of money.
There's no world building at all.
Yeah, yeah.
And everything that's Ozzy is inside a set.
Right, inside. Mombi is... Princess Mombi has taken over. She's evil. But then also above her is the Gnome King, which is a cool idea because gnomes traditionally come from mountains. Yeah. But he is a mountain.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
And the best looking thing in the movie is the claymation of his spies that, like, yes, their faces on the rocks. Yeah.
Those are cool.
But she goes from Mombi to the Gnome King. Like, it feels like there's no middle there.
Yeah. You're right.
And that's
she's always in danger of losing her life at every minute of
this
thing.
She's in peril constantly.
Yeah. And she's always so willing to accept her death.
Yeah, and more than once she says it can't be helped. And I'm like, what's the idea here?
She's falling out of the sky. And Jack's Pumpkinhead says, I'm sorry, Mom. And she goes, it can't be helped. Like, you're about to die.
Yeah, you're dead. Wait, I want to read you something. Okay.
That being said, this is a classic. And everyone should watch it.
This is the... From 1985, this is the review written by Gene Siskel. Oh, where to begin? Let's start with one of the opening scenes of Return to Oz that is certain to send young children under the age of, say, 6, screaming up the aisles. Little Dorothy has been having visions, and her desperate parents have decided to take her to a mean old doctor who, along with his nasty nurse, immediately straps Dorothy to a bed where he will give her electroshock treatments. Yes, that's right. That's one of the opening scenes of Return to Oz, which the publicists for the film have taken great pains to point out is more faithful to the real spirit of the whole series of L. Frank Baum books. Well, here's some news for the publicists. There isn't such a scene contained in the Oz books upon which this new film is based. This torture scene, which predictably is interrupted by lightning, is a total invention by Walter Murch, the ham-handed director of the movie.
Yeah.
And it goes on like that.
As someone who's read the books, visually, they're more faithful to the books, but the books are very light. This is much darker.
I wonder why...
It seemed like he just wanted to do a dark Oz movie.
But he's so faithful to so much of it, especially the look.
Even
it
the
makes
school...
you feel like he must have really cared about it.
Yeah. The score, too, I think is a beautiful score, but it's so melancholy.
Oh, it feels like a sort of like melodrama score.
Yeah.
It's like very like, not without my daughter. Like, yeah. it's very, it's all so sad.
And there are moments in this movie that are terrifying.
Yeah. I read another article recently. I read an article that was published a couple years ago. I forget where it was. But the author was like, my first horror movie was Return to Oz.
When Mombi wakes up and she's headless, and then Dorothy's running down that hallway and all the heads are screaming.
Oh my God.
And then the main head goes, Dorothy, it's scary. It is so frightening. The Wheelers are terrifying.
Yeah. Oh my God. So Mombi, all right, Dorothy gets to Oz and she finds Mombi in Oz where Scarecrow should be the king. And Scarecrow's MIA, and everyone outside is turned to stone. So Mombi's there, and Mombi's this beautiful young blonde playing some harp or something.
Yeah.
And then Mombi gets up, takes Dorothy, we see a hallway with heads, and they're not dummy heads. They all were real actresses that I guess were like, they were
beheaded.
Yeah, their bodies were like hidden in the set. And they're all looking at Dorothy as
it's
she walks
so
by.
It's so scary.
And then she takes out a different head.
But again,
head.
This is in the book.
Is it really?
Yeah. The heads thing is in the book.
She takes out a different head and then puts a new head on. And that's now a brunette head. And then she locks Dorothy up. And then when Dorothy's locked up, she now meets Jack Pumpkinhead.
You almost said Skellington because he's such
he's
a ripoff.
So similar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jack Pumpkinhead. And we find out that Jack Pumpkinhead was brought to life by this sort of magic living powder.
Yeah.
And that if Dorothy wants to find that to escape, that's in the locker with her original head. And the original head is the nurse from the asylum. So it's this sort of espionage scene of don't wake the evil head. And Dorothy sneaks out. And then she gets to the locker and she opens, and there's the evil head right there. And next to it is the powder.
Yeah.
And the way you know it, she knocks something over. The head immediately wakes up, starts screaming, and then it's just
but like
a
guttural. At first, I was like, what is she saying? It wasn't until I think this time around as an adult that I realized she was saying Dorothy Gale.
Yeah, yeah.
Because she's like, duh. It's so
everybody
scary.
Calls her Dorothy Gale, first and last name.
Yeah. I guess they remember her from last time.
But what's weird is, when she's on Kansas and she's running away from the asylum, when the nurse sees her, she goes so in a weird voice. Yeah. And what does so mean?
Yeah, that seemed dubbed to me.
It's yeah.
It was just like bad dubbing.
But she uses that voice.
Yeah, it's really that voice is that husky voice.
But she's
scary.
Great.
She is really
she's great.
The acting is really good. I also think Piper Laurie is really good as Annie M.
Yes, Piper Laurie is really good. She's just
it's nice to see her as a nice maternal figure.
Yeah, but still depressing.
Oh yeah.
You know who else is really good?
The Gnome King.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't realize till this time around that every time they guess wrong, he becomes more human.
Right. Yeah, right.
Totally went over my head as a kid.
Because as it's he only says it once. He wants to become fully human.
Yeah.
And the more
and then once they start coming back, he starts turning more into stone.
Right, right. Which I didn't get either.
Yeah, I didn't get that as a kid.
But then there's a real gender-bending image of him with the
yes,
ruby slippers.
I was thinking about that. That was really interesting.
Because he's so, like, into wearing them.
Yes, and then you see, like, they even have, like, the because I just remember seeing the bows.
Yeah.
But then even there's a shot from the side where you see he's got the heel and everything on
yeah.
it. Like, it's like this moment of like, I don't know, it gave me like vibes of like Frankenfurter or something.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like he's going to like put up a leg and be like, check out my slippers.
And he fucking high roads Dorothy because he's like, oh, they fell from the sky when you left because you were in such a hurry to get back home. And it's like, whoa, what's the message here? Like, Dorothy's an asshole because she wanted to go home?
Well, I was thinking that this time around, I guess this, and this harkens back to what we were talking about earlier, like, what were we supposed to take away from this one if we read it as a sequel to the first one, that it wasn't just a dream, that this time around it's proven that Oz does exist and that
that's
she's just
got to
keep it hush hush because at the end she's like, Annie M, come look, and then Ozma's like, shh, be quiet, which is chilling.
Right, because it's like, if she is a schizophrenic,
it's like, don't tell anyone.
That's just her voice is telling her, like, no, they'll send you back to
this
the asylum.
A beautiful mind.
Do you want to go back to the asylum, Dorothy? You must keep me a secret.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard because, like, she picks up the Oz key, and she goes, Aunt Em, it's the key from Oz, but Aunt Em doesn't even fucking look at it, and she goes, oh, that's the key from the old house. I've turned it a million times, but she doesn't look at it.
Yeah.
So it's kind of vague. But
it
again, it's the problem
to, it
of trying to be
ways.
Two things.
Yeah.
Yeah,
trying to have it both ways.
I read it as Oz is real in this version, even though
but
there's
just
the other
so
bullshit.
Happens to have a counterpart. Like, there just so happens to be a version of everyone in Kansas.
Is there a TikTok in the books?
Yes, there's a TikTok in the books. So TikTok has his own book. The eighth book is TikTok of Oz.
All right, so you've read. All of them.
Not,
because it's
the
like,
original, were there were 12 or 14 originals. I think I read the first 10, and then I got to a point where I was just like aged out of it.
All right. So do you remember enough to tell me like how they put them together?
Yeah. Yes. From what I remember, the main storyline is from Ozma of Oz because...
And that's the what
the
book?
Third book.
The third
because
book.
The second book does not feature Dorothy at all.
Right.
And the children wrote to L. Frank Baum saying that they wanted to see Dorothy again.
Thank God
so
there was
never
no Twitter
made,
back
he
then.
He never made that mistake again and she came back...
They would have Ryan Johnson'd him.
Yeah. She came back in the third book and was in every book after that.
Yeah.
The main character of the second book was a boy named Tip who... He finds out at the end...
He's Ozma.
...that he is Ozma who has been disguised for his own protection. No, he's the wizard. The wizard is the villain. It's this weird thing where... Okay, so not to go too deep into this, but the first book was very successful, and there was a very successful vaudeville show based on it, stage play. And L. Frank Baum wrote the second book knowing... or hoping or planning for it to become another vaudeville show. Uh-huh. So it's very vaudevillian, and it takes a lot from the show that wasn't in the original uh-huh. book, including, spoiler alert, that Tip was Ozma in disguise. And he wrote that, which we would think is odd, but at the time, that part would have been played by a woman playing a young boy, and then at the end would have, like, taken her hair down and been Ozma. And there's, like, chorus girls in it, and it's very, like, vaudevillian.
Okay.
And then he got back to the original sauce recipe in the third one.
Yeah, yeah.
Because the second book is, like, very weird.
So really, it's more the third book.
So it's more the third book, but there are characters and some situations from the second book too. So it's like it's a mixture of the two of them.
It's funny that you say that, because I thought it was the opposite, because I feel like the Ozma storyline feels tacked on to it. Like, you've got the whole Gnome King thing, and you see that little girl a few times, and then we see her once she's in a mirror. She's trapped in a mirror in this movie. And Mombi says to the mirror, like, no one's going to remember you, which is a weird thing. Like, they're waiting for everyone to forget that she existed.
But everyone's stone. I had questions about that.
There's a lot of,
like, who was still alive besides Mombi and the Wheelers? It feels like a very, like a movie that was made in someone's backyard or something.
Yeah, because...
like, it's just, you know, you ever watch those movies where you just get the sense that there weren't many people in the room?
Yeah, like, there's no citizens of Oz.
No.
Like, the Emerald City, they're all stone, but, like, you don't see Munchkins, you don't see...
And there's no color, it just looks like a forest.
Right, and then there's the desert.
Yeah, which is terrifying as well. Because, like, in the MGM movie, there were, like, big plastic flowers everywhere, and it was just...
And anthropomorphized trees.
Yes, there was much more of an atmosphere in the original.
Yeah, in this one, there's, like, trees that have pails on them that have lunch.
Which is from the book.
But they don't talk.
No. Yeah, it's weird. I was thinking this time, this is a random thought, Belina.
Yeah.
For some reason, and I don't know why, I forgot her voice.
Yeah.
And I was fully expecting, like, Joan Rivers to be Belina.
Like, in Look Who's Talking To?
I guess in my head I combined it with Look Who's Talking To. And then I was disappointed when it wasn't. And then I thought, God, what an opportunity missed.
Yeah.
That could have been a Joan Rivers chicken.
I looked it up. Belina's kind of nobody.
Yeah, no.
There's really not... Fruza Balka was her, like, first real thing.
In it.
None of the voices are really celebrities. The guy... I forget his name. The guy who plays the Gnome King... He was well known, and he has, like, a great voice. If you ever saw the John Borman version of Excalibur, he plays Merlin. He's got, like, a great, great voice. Nicole Williamson, that's his name. There's a lot of gender shit in there. Like,
there is.
Like, Belina's big issue is she can't lay an egg.
Mombi's got some husky vibes in her voice. And Belina can't lay an egg.
And Mombi's very, she's vain. That's why she has all those heads.
Yeah.
And then she traps Ozma in a mirror. There's a lot of, like, a vanity in it.
I feel like Mombi was almost kind of coded as, like, a drag kind of character.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that would make sense.
For a minute, I mean, and no disrespect to anyone, but for a minute I was like, is this a male actor playing Mombi?
That's interesting. That's kind of like the way...
But it's not. I mean, it's not, but it's Jean Marsh, I think.
It's kind of like the way... They based Ursula on Divine in Little Mermaid. So it sort of stands in opposition to, like, the sort of, like, pure, quote-unquote, like, femininity of Ariel. But isn't there a book where, like, there was a feminist uprising in Oz? Isn't there a book where all the women of Oz get together and they storm?
There might be. That's not ringing a bell, but maybe.
Yeah. I've only read the first one.
Like I said, I think I read the first 10, but the only one I've read multiple times is the first one.
So the end, which is the thing that I remember the most, is the Gnome King says, I'll give you back Scarecrow, who, by the way, Scarecrow, he looks great, but his face can barely move.
Yeah.
And apparently that's because they were going to do that, but they ran out of money.
It always bothered me, too, that the Tin Man doesn't speak.
Yeah.
Like, the Tin Man does nothing.
The Lion doesn't do anything either, really.
But he's there. At least you see the Lion. I feel like you barely see the Tin Man at all.
Yeah.
Not enough classic Ozziness.
But apparently in that last scene in Oz, there's a lot of characters from the books just hidden in there.
There are. I feel like they should have expanded that, and maybe they just, like, didn't have the money.
Like, I read that Glinda's in there, but I forget what Glinda looks like in the books. She doesn't look like...
She looks different.
Well, here's what happened. Walter Murch started making the movie, a couple of weeks into it, they were Disney was looking at the dailies and they were like, this looks like a hot, hot mess. So they fired him. He ran to George Lucas and Steven Spielberg.
First, they gave him more money.
They did?
Yeah. So I was reading up on it today. Mm-hmm. Apparently, from what I read, they switched CEOs or something.
Right.
And then the new person was like, oh, I'm so excited about this Oz project. Let's give you even more money. And then they were like, we gave you all this extra money and this is what you're coming up with. Yeah. And then they fired him.
Right. And then he cried to Lucas and Spielberg. And then they called Disney. And Lucas said, if it still doesn't work out, I'll direct it.
Yeah.
So he got his job back. But then there was another regime change at Disney. And by this point, the new people, he was from two regimes ago, and the new CEO of Disney did not give a shit about the movie at all.
Yeah. Well, and it was in development from like 1980 onward. So it took a long time to be made.
And so what, they didn't publicize it. It came out. I think it made $11 million and it cost like $30 million.
Did very well overseas, though.
Did it really?
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the reasons why we know it, or people our age know it, was it was shown a lot on the Disney Channel.
Yeah.
Back in the beginning of the Disney Channel, mm-hmm. before like they got into like
original programming.
Yeah, yeah. The Disney Channel used to be weird.
I like the old school Disney Channel.
Remember like Avonlea?
Yes.
That was like Anna Green Gables. Like it was a lot of like
Heidi.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And they showed Return to Oz a lot on the Disney Channel.
They did.
And I feel like that's where people of our age saw it.
Yeah.
Probably. Because it is kind of a cult classic.
It is.
People
it does have
who
a large,
know it,
it
love
there
it.
There are lots of screenings of it.
Yeah.
There was a screening of it at Alamo Drafthouse recently.
Yeah, yeah. I know Fairuza Balk sometimes goes to them. She's actually good in it.
She is good. I like that Fairuza Balk is like, okay, so she was Dorothy in this, and then she was a witch in The Craft, and then she was also the worst witch. So
I don't remember the worst witch.
That was the original, not the new Netflix worst witch. The original, like 80s, 90s worst witch with Tim Curry.
Is that the one where Tim Curry sings that song?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Yeah. She
she's got an interesting catalog.
She's kind of weird in it, but I like that Dorothy's a little weird.
She was giving me some Alice from Alice in Wonderland vibes.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
for sure. Well, she's actually a kid. She's like 11 or something.
Yeah, Judy Garland was 17.
Was like 16 or something.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing that I was going to bring up before is that this is not considered to be the official sequel to the MGM Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, no, it's not.
But there is an official sequel, which we watched as a kid. I don't know if you remember. The 1964 TV. It was actually theatrically released, and then it was played a lot on TV in the early 70s. It's called Journey Back to Oz.
I remember
and
that.
And it has a lot of the same characters from this. Jack Pumpkinhead is in it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember that.
Mombi is in it. And that is actually, canonically, the official sequel.
Because it was made by MGM?
Because it was made by MGM. It was made by Filmation. It's animated. But it was authorized by MGM. And Dorothy is voiced by Liza Minnelli.
It was made by Filmation?
Yes. And it's Liza Minnelli as Dorothy. And Margaret Hamilton is in it as the voice of Annie M, who was the original witch in the MGM one. So that is the official sequel. It's animated.
But...
And then when they added on TV, they added the wizard wasn't in it in the original theatrical release.
Uh-huh.
So when they aired it on TV, they rebranded it as like a Christmas special and they showed it on ABC every Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And they added in live action segments of Bill Cosby as the wizard.
Whoa. Not aged well.
No.
But do you remember in the 1990s there was an animated series that looked like the MGM?
Yes.
It was that Glinda. It used the same music. It was like
it was the official.
Yeah, it was
cartoon series.
The license of that.
It was you were born in 83. I was born in 86.
Yeah,
and we kind of came of age in around 89 where there was this big boom because it was of Wizard of Oz nostalgia because it was the 50th anniversary.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they
released
new toys and they released
and
the cartoon.
And it was on VHS.
And it was on VHS. So that was a product of that.
Yeah.
I remember that show. And there was the video game
I remember
that we
watched,
had.
Oh, the video
Super
game.
Nintendo.
One of the hardest games ever.
It's so hard.
Yeah. Was that on? I remember watching that show on HBO in the morning. But
yes.
I don't know if HBO made it or if HBO just showed it.
I think HBO just
because
showed
HBO
it.
Because HBO produced Fraggle Rock, which people don't remember.
No, I didn't know that.
That was their first original show, Fraggle Rock.
Really?
Yeah. By the way, Brian Henson plays Jack Pumpkinhead. Not the voice, but like the actual movement.
And I didn't know until today that Deep Roy...
Yeah, yeah.
...is...
He's Tin Man, I think.
Yeah.
Oh, oh yes. I was talking about the ending. In the end, which is the thing I remember the most, the Gnome King's like, okay, you have to get your friends back, you have to go into this room of this collections, and you have to say, you put your hand on something and say Oz, and when you say that, if it's somebody, they come back. If not, you turn into a trinket.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. And when eventually Dorothy realizes that all the trinkets that are green emerald are her friends, and this has stuck in my head in such a deep way. Like whenever I'm out somewhere, like, and I see like an emerald anything, I'm like,
really?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you're gonna touch it and say Oz.
I want to be like Oz, and then something will come out. It just, I don't know, it stuck with me.
That's interesting. Yeah. I forgot about that part until I watched it this time around.
Oh, you did, really? To me, that's the most memorable thing. Yeah, I think it's...
To me, the part that I always remember is the flight of the sofa thing.
I feel like that is like what was on the poster.
Yeah, that's why I guess I always remember that.
They kind of fucked it over. They didn't publicize it a lot, and they kind of fucked it over in the they should have said in the commercials, this is not a musical, because a lot of people went expecting music. Well,
yeah. Apparently, I again, in my reading today, I found out that like a lot of people took their young children to see this and like left the theater.
There's no music, but there is moaning and pain.
Yeah.
It's a charming little gem. I'm happy that it exists.
I like it. I guess because I think like before when I said the attention to detail was so striking, I think what I really mean by that is like I know that it's been so shit on by everyone.
Yeah.
That I was expecting it to be a piece of shit. And then when I watched it and I was like, oh, a lot of care was put into this. Yeah.
There are two kinds of bad movies. Shitty slop shows.
Right.
And things that just missed the mark.
Yeah.
And you could tell the director really cared about this movie.
Yes.
He really had a vision. He really cared about it. I wish he had directed more. It's weird that he never directed again because, you know...
It was only his first time out.
Yeah, yeah. And he went back to editing. And I think he won an Oscar for editing English Patient or whatever. Yeah. But
it did garner some positive reviews that I was reading. It wasn't a total... It was a box office bomb, but...
It wasn't critically panned.
No, it had mixed reviews.
I think it was one of those things where... People brought their kids expecting a sequel to The Wizard of Oz, and they got shock treatment.
Yeah.
You should see it if you haven't.
Watch it. It's a classic.
All right. Thanks for listening. This has been Pop Culture Man Children. Anthony, thanks for coming back.
Of course. You're welcome.
Okay. Thank you. You know, since we talked about this, and I think we should go through things we watch as children together.
Yeah.
And since you said Filmation, I would love us to do an episode.
Happily Ever After.
Happily Ever After. Dom DeLuise as the fucking
the Magic Mirror.
Magic Mirror. It's a sequel to Snow White.
Why did we just watch low budget sequels to good things as kids?
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about. It's superior to the original Snow White. Filmation, who mostly known for He-Man and She-Ra, had to put that in because that episode can't go by where we don't talk about She-Ra. This has been Pop Culture Mad Children. I'm Mike Mangiorno. I'm here with Anthony. He'll be back. Thanks for listening. Go bye-bye.
Go bye-bye.